One thing that made it possible for us, and now for you listening to these tapes, to hear the old network in operation is a phenomenon called microphonics. Here, relays, which are the basic electromechanical switch devices that are the backbone of the entire old switching network, pick up the vibrations of the rack that the relay is mounted on. The result is a telephone network that's more interesting to hear the workings of than it otherwise would be. Here, for example, is a recording of a silent call within the West 73rd Street Central office. Somewhere in this circuit, there's a relay, which is mounted on a rack with other relays, which are moving, the whole thing is vibrating, and you can hear it, and we would often hear sounds like this in the background of our local calls. Additionally, there is some revertive pulse crosstalk leaking through from other calls. If this same call were left up 24 hours a day, you'd find that it was pretty quiet at night, and then in the morning it would start getting noisy again, just like a city street. There's a switching system known as number 1 crossbar, invented by the Bell System, first installed in the 1930s, and it's overall my favorite. The thing that makes crossbar 1 so wondrous to listen to is the register senders. These are the devices that give you dial tone, store your digits, and then end up sending the digits out over whatever trunk is selected. The register sender is basically a big collection of relays, and one of the nicest sounds that you hear in crossbar 1 is in this next example. The most pronounced sound here is the sound of Ben's speeded-up dial, which makes a loud razzing noise, but that's not what I'm referring to. I'm referring to the metallic sounds that you will hear between his digits and afterward. You just heard Ben, from his home phone in Bell Harbor, Queens, dial a 7-digit number, which, due to the way the call is routed, requires the register sender to send multi-frequency tones. 7 digits, which means 9 little beeps there. But you don't hear the tones, you just hear the clanging of the relays that are making the tones. This part of what you heard is a mechanical sound of the relays that are actually turning the beeps off and on to send out the multi-frequency tones. And that last loud metallic sound is the register sender dropping out, leaving the call to continue to go through because it's done its job. As I said, you can't hear the tones. One exception to this, however, where you get to hear the clanging and the tones at the same time, is this. That was the sound of one of the 107 register senders in VZ Tandem 1, a gateway office to New Jersey from New York City. Now, I'm not going to make any New Jersey jokes. It's too easy. Let's just say that as a phone enthusiast and a New Yorker, I wouldn't mind going to Jersey as long as I went by phone and I got to hear this on the way. Hey, I got the nicest part of going to Jersey right here. Within a crossbar 1 office, such as Ben's, where you don't hear the tones but you do hear the clanging, there were as many register senders as there were dial tones, and each one had its distinctive signature. No two sounded alike. For example, here's one that is more subtle than the last one we heard, doesn't make as much clanging noise. And here are a few more, each one clangier than the last. Thank you. just to put these sounds we've been listening to in context, here's a New Jersey call, and then a call from Ben's house, each of which were used in the preceding examples. As you can see, some of these sounds are pretty loud and others are pretty soft. In the last segment, I mentioned that in the old network, you were never really alone, even if you were sitting on a phone circuit by yourself. Here's an obvious example of what I mean. The register senders in a number one crossbar office were designed to give dial tone, store, and send digits. They were not used for the conversation portion of a phone call. Therefore, the phone company didn't need to completely eliminate crosstalk from one register sender to another. Here, as I pause while dialing a local call from a number one crossbar payphone in the Bronx, you can hear another caller, a kid, speaking the phone number out loud as he's dialing it. After pausing to listen to the kid, I finish dialing my call, which then goes through. Not only can you hear him saying the last digit of the phone number as 9, you can actually hear his sender revertive pulsing the 9. So first he says 9, then he dials it, then his sender revertive pulses it. And that's just the first example of what I mean by you were never alone, even if you were by yourself. Actually, there was one exception. The early incarnation of the electronic switches, the number one ESS, made a point of being very, very quiet while you were dialing a phone number. I first noticed this in 1970 when I encountered one in Atlanta, and boy, it was strange because it seemed like a sterile, modern thing. Dead silence in between the digits of the number you were dialing. Sterile, modern, but not the last word, because surprisingly in 1978 the phone company stopped bothering to isolate the equipment so that you were hearing dead silence while you were dialing. And therefore from 1978 on, all the newer electronic switches, the number 1 and 1A ESSs, did let you hear other customers dialing in the background. So if you just picked up your phone, dialed a digit, and listened, you could hear other people. All I did was dial a 4. The touch tones you heard in the background were other customers. Now, of course, once the call went through, you would lose the crosstalk. Here's one of those calls to France that I spoke about in the previous segment. You'll notice that during and after my dialing of the number, you can hear both rotary dial and touch tone crosstalk. But as soon as the call starts to complete, all that disappears.
Donner suite au numéro que vous avez formé. Veuillez consulter votre centre de renseignement.
What's notable about what we've just been listening to is that it still exists. Though this telephone segment is from 1981, this narration was done in 2003, and somewhere in the United States there is almost certainly still a number 1 or 1A ESS office that has this phenomenon where while you're dialing a number you can actually hear other customers. And of all the old network things that are a part of this presentation, this and only this exists in modern times. But it won't be around for long. The two things you've just heard, the kid in the Bronx leaking through while I'm dialing, and then the same phenomenon on an ESS, are both a result of the use of unbalanced power for equipment that gives you dial tone. This resulted in a lot of other nice things about the old network, including distinctive hums and whines that would let you know exactly what office you were calling from and make every neighborhood sound different from any other, even when the switching equipment type was the same. It's the reason that Ben went all over New York City recording every panel and number one crossbar office he could, rather than just one or two. I won't go into that here because there's really not time, but we've only just scratched the surface of the things this phenomenon did to make the old network sound the way it did. What follows gets even more interesting. In fact, it borders on awesome. Let's say it's 1979, you are in Atlanta. You're calling from a step-by-step phone line, and you start to dial a phone number. After dialing the first two digits, you notice that there's some subtle clicking in the background of the phone line. So you stop right there, press your ear into the receiver, and this is what you hear. This is the sound of other subscribers' dials dialing away. It's being amplified onto the trunks because this is a step-by-step environment, and the pulses that go along these trunks are so strong that they do leak from one trunk to another. Here are a few more of this type of recordings. Again, crosstalk from other trunks in a step-by-step environment. What you've just been listening to was made possible by capacitive inductance in an analog system. The old network had pairs of wires running along side by side for miles and miles, and a certain amount of crosstalk is expected in that situation. The modern digital network has some opportunities for capacitive inductance too, but they generally get eliminated by the digitization process because very low volume signals simply are ignored in a digital domain. So this is a phenomenon that for the most part belongs to the past. Long Island, where I'm from, is not exactly known for its beautiful boulevards. However, I'm going to show you some boulevards on Long Island that are quite nice. Not a one of them is for autos. They're all for phone calls. These are trunks, the telephone circuits that aren't dedicated to just one customer's line, but are available for use between any two customers where a connection needs to be established between point A and point B. And Long Island had very long, plain old cable pair trunks in the 1970s because they weren't so quick to replace everything with that digital carrier like they did in Atlanta. This made for a very nice old-fashioned network in what otherwise would have been a fairly boring place because Long Island is mostly number 5 crossbar, probably the least interesting to observe, though surely the most sophisticated, electromechanical system. Here are some background sounds. Before I put these on, let me just mention something about what you'll hear, because in Atlanta, when you listen to the background sounds of trunks, you hear dial pulsing. That's because my Atlanta phone service was served out of a step-by-step office. That's the sort of thing you hear. Long Island has number 5 crossbar and some number 1 crossbar. And these switches use a different system to communicate over the trunks to say what number is being called. So instead of Atlanta's dial pulsing, you'll hear this. Revertive pulsing. And of course this. Multi-frequency tones. So let's listen to some of the silences of Long Island from 1976. In the old network, that sort of stuff was always in the background. We were listening to the background noise of trunks, and here's another example of it from New York, a place that in 1977 had really, really long wire trunks running for miles and miles. This is a routine call from Ben's house in the Bell Harbor part of Queens up to Manhattan. Just listen to the activity that is in the background during the short time that he is on hold. I'll turn the volume up and let you hear what's going on there.
Hold on a moment.
Okay, go ahead.
All that activity always there in the background. That's what it was like. It was about as quiet as a Manhattan apartment with the windows closed. And it was meaningful. Just as you might be able to pick out the sound of a particular car whose engine had a particular sort of whine as you were listening to the sounds of a city street, you indeed could pick out little details of some of the stuff you were observing as you listened to the vast electromechanical city that was the network of the 1970s. You'll see what I mean when I play some snippets of this for Bill from New York, and he should be able to tell exactly what it is he's hearing just by the sound that we picked up in the background. I'll do that later on. This next example is from Long Island, and it's a little unusual because it contains both trunk and regular phone line crosstalk. That's because the call goes out from one CO to another, but the last leg of it ends up running alongside with regular telephone lines in order to get to a private branch exchange, the dedicated telephone system for a business. So you hear the usual multi-frequency tones, but you also hear phones in the neighborhood ringing. There's also a point where you hear coins going into a payphone, and the last part has some dial pulsing. Here's an example from Farmingdale, Long Island, calling a non-working Farmingdale number. This goes out to Hempstead because that's where the automatic intercept system, the thing that pieces together the custom report to say the number you're calling and give you the status, is located. And by the way, this is the world's first AIS, the one in Hempstead. The announcements are done by Jane Barbie. I'm going to stay on the line after the operator hangs up, and we'll see what we hear there.
The number you have reached, 293-0000, is not in service. Please check the number and dial again. 293-0000 is not in service.
Operator.
Just thought I'd mention what some of these sounds are. First of all, this high-pitched staticky sound is probably the sound of connections being made through the crossbar switch network in the Farmingdale central office. The very fact that it's this high frequency proves that it is local and is not coming from the other end of the line, which in this case is in Hempstead, where the automatic intercept system is. Now, the sound that sounded like a squealing teapot, which you heard before and will hear again, is a nearby trunk which goes into oscillation when it's about to receive a phone number, as it will in a second. That click was a customer hanging up on an AIS report, which I could make out was a changed number. The ghostliest sound is this. At first, it sounds like a bunch of dogs barking in unison. You listen carefully, though, and you can hear that it's Jane Barbie's voice. The AIS has an announcement machine that's on a magnetic drum with many tracks, and the phrases are being spoken all the time. I can't make out exactly which phrases are audible, although I know the digit O is one of them. But I kid you not, there is a sound like this in the trunk noise. You may not be able to hear it, though. I'll fade back into the real trunk noise in a minute. One thing you will be able to hear, of course, is another ingredient of it, the AIS operator ring. I filtered that last segment so that the barking dogs of Jane could be a little more audible. But since not everyone is going to hear them still, I'll play this next segment unfiltered, but I'll mix in my version of this weird ghostly sound so that everybody can hear what I'm talking about at least. Creepy, huh? Call in the phenomena investigators. Maybe there's ghosts on that phone line. Well, now seems as good a time as any to run some of those sounds past Bill from New York and see if he can make some sense out of them. I did say that by listening to the sounds in the background, you could actually hear identifiable things that were meaningful. So, I have two examples, one of which we heard before, the other which we didn't, that I'll run by him and see if he can figure it out.
All right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Cut one was recorded on a wire trunk from Ben's office up to West 73rd Street. Ben's office isn't involved in this trivia question, but the question is, what area code is being called?
The answer is New Jersey, area code 201. And you can't get the answer in this case by decoding the tones.
It sounds like PCI almost.
Right. But it's PCI followed by...
Oh, well, I see, because we're getting crosstalk. So we're PCI-ing in... Oh, the area code that they are calling to is New Jersey.
You're right!
201, because BC Tandem, PCI.
Now, with cut two, it's an even easier question. Question two, what kind of a phone call was that?
The answer is that it's a call where the customer dials zero followed by the phone number. A TSP or TSPS call in the lingo.
Well, it's a camera call.
You're close, but not right. Listen again to the end of the first MF sequence.
Oh my gosh, it's a TSPS call.
There you go.
I knew he could do it, and the sounds, of course, are almost 30 years old at this point. But we'll never forget them, because these sounds are unlike anything that's ever happened since. In today's world of digital devices and computer networks and things, I don't know if any of you who are younger can understand this, but this stuff was physical, it was built, it was made out of steel and copper and aluminum. And to me, that made it worth listening to, because the sounds were natural. They weren't made up like, you know... I'm sorry, hold on just a minute, I have to respond to that sound. Well, now, see? You've got two sounds side by side. One of them is contrived by software, the other is a natural analog sound. Digital. Analog. There you go. Well, anyway, as you can see, I much prefer natural analog sounds, but in this day and age, you just have to be realistic, and sometimes you have to compromise. The new custom ringtone for my cell phone is an example of digitized analog, like this. Hello? Well, I was originally going to use a whoopee cushion to make my point, but they've gone digital too. What's the world coming to? Anyway, before we go on, let me say something about Mother's Day and Christmas, the two busiest days for phone calls in the Bell system. Geez, he just threw up to make a point, now he's gonna talk about Mother's Day? Yeah, hi, Mom.
Message L2. Welcome to AT&T Wireless Services.
In the 1970s, Mother's Day and Christmas were a special challenge for Bell System engineers, because unlike today, they didn't have a network with multiple dynamic routing possibilities automatically programmed into it, and so they had to do a lot of things on the fly. For example, they would often end up sending calls through New York City that had nothing to do with New York City, just in order to take advantage of that big business day capacity that would normally sit idle on a day like Christmas or Mother's Day. However, despite their best efforts, a lot of calls ended up on recordings like the one you're about to hear. What's cool about this recording is that there's a certain amount of crosstalk from one caller to another, and when most callers connect to this recording, there's a string of multi-frequency tones that gets beeped out over the line. Now, on Mother's Day, so many calls reach this recording that if you listen in the background, you can hear the multi-frequency tones constantly going on. And each string of 10 beeps is someone connecting to the recording. This was recorded from Ben's house, and as he dials the number, you'll hear more of that wonderful number one crossbar gonginess on the register sender. And then the recording is coming from Forest Hills, the switch that handles Ben's outgoing long-distance calls. From the sheer number of MF tones in the background of the recording, you can get some sense of the huge amount of traffic that's being handled.
Sorry, but due to heavy Mother's Day calling, all circuits are busy now. We hope it will be convenient for you to try your call later. This is a recording. 21233. We're sorry, but due to heavy Mother's Day calling, all circuits are busy now. We hope it will be convenient for you to try your call later. This is a recording. 21233. We're sorry, but due to heavy Mother's Day calling, all circuits are busy now. We hope it will be convenient for you to try your call later. This is a recording. 21233. We're sorry, but due to heavy Mother's Day calling, all circuits are busy now. We hope it will be convenient for you to try your call later. This is a recording. 21233. We're sorry, but due to heavy Mother's Day calling, all circuits are busy now. We hope it will be convenient for you to try your call later. This is a recording. 21233. We're sorry, but due to heavy Mother's Day calling, all circuits are busy now. We hope it will be convenient for you to try your call later. This is a recording. 21233. We're sorry, but due to heavy Mother's Day calling, all circuits are busy now. We hope it will be convenient for you to try your call later.
Everything we've heard up to this point depicts the telephone network of the 1970s operating properly. While there is crosstalk, it's at low levels, and it's just a part of normal operation. What follows, however, is a malfunction. The first example of this was in 1977, the last was in 1985, and back in those days there was an analog interface that was required for the digital T1 carrier system. That's the system that takes 24 conversations, converts it to a string of ones and zeros, and sends it across a cable, microwave, or fiber optics to the other end, where it's then converted back to sound again. In 1980, this digital system still had to have an analog part to interface it to the analog switches that made the connections, and it would occasionally malfunction as follows.
This is September 1980. I'm calling from 914-698. And the following is what I got calling an 800-241 number that is busy. I don't know where this is coming from, but we're going out on 91411, that white plains foray that's not AT&T. And however it is that we get to Atlanta for 241, this is what I got.
Now, when I got this, I was just innocently dialing phone calls from Mamaroneck, New York, and I got it while I was dialing a busy signal, which was actually good because then I could stay on the line and record the phenomenon. But other people got this when they were dialing calls that went through successfully, and that means that some people actually had their call go through and heard the person they were trying to talk to on the line as just one of the many voices. I mean, can you imagine how creepy that is? You call somebody and their voice is there and they can hear you really well, but you hear them as just one in a crowd. Now, I don't have any first-hand information on what caused this, but I have heard that when a channel unit would go bad, and that's the digital analog interface they needed back in the 80s to handle each and every conversation, this could happen, and it apparently was not a rare event. Though I don't know anything about T1 carrier equipment, certainly there had to be individual amplifier circuits for each and every channel. And they would have all had to be powered off the same common power supply, with everything carefully balanced to prevent crosstalk. Well, if one of those channel units, representing just one of the 24 conversations, had a certain malfunction, it apparently did cause this, and it appears, based on what you'll hear in a minute, that whatever it was some sort of a loose connection somewhere. Now right there, my busy signal started to come up to full volume. And I think that was the loose connection right there. You know, I don't know whether somebody in the CO just leaned their butt up against the rack and that made it go back to normal, but there were a few times when the busy signal came back and all the other voices disappeared. In this next part, about 17 seconds in, you can hear a British ring start up, plus the sound of the answer over the international circuit, which is a 2400 Hz tone burst. Well, that's it for this segment. And in this segment, everything you've heard was a natural occurrence. There was no freaking or hacking or anything like that. The only unorthodox thing done to make the original tapes was dialing a phone number that was unassigned or permanently busy, or basically dialing a call we knew would not go through in order to get the sound of the equipment on tape. The editing to produce this production, on the other hand, includes such things as my having filtered out certain harmonics of 60 Hz to remove hum so that you could hear more details. And in case I didn't make this clear earlier, this sound, when heard by itself, is my recreation of a sound that really was a part of the trunk noise. Obviously, there was no technical way to use filtering to extract that sound from the real sample, so I recreated it. And I didn't get it exactly right, but I think it's close enough to effectively represent the sound to most people. In fact, I think most listeners... I knew that was gonna happen. Go away, will you? Shoo! Aw, come on, dog. It's just Jane.
Try to avoid complaining over minor irritations. It'll only make you feel all the more annoyed.
Shut up, Jane.
Shut up, Jane.
One final note. When I first posted this, it was August of 2003, and it was right after I'd heard that Jane Barbie, the Time Lady, was no longer with us. Her voice is all over my tapes, and so she will be fondly remembered on this webpage for many years to come. But I was pretty broke up over it at the time. See, I had just been listening to what turned out to be Jane's final appearance on NPR, and while I was listening to that recording, I, for the first time, began to really get a sense of the human being that had been behind that incredible voice all along. It was as if suddenly, after all those years of hearing that voice, which to me so often sounded like some sort of celestial music, out stepped a flesh-and-blood person, just a nice lady, who had been playing that wonderful instrument through most of my lifetime. Knowing as I did that this artisan, whose works had decorated the world I lived in, was never going to produce another work, and now sensing her humanity unmasked as well, this was all hitting home pretty hard, and I could barely say a word without sobbing. I did not know Jane. I only spoke to her on the phone maybe 3 times, but I know her telephone work perhaps better than anyone, and I can say that it was simply excellent and went the extra mile in so many ways. The old network was, to me, a place of wonder and beauty, and she was the author of much of that beauty. I'd always hoped to catch up with her again and tie up a few loose ends. I had a few questions about the old days that I'd wanted answered, but sadly, that conversation isn't going to happen, at least not on this dimension.
Thanks for calling 7 for the correct time and temperature. The time is...
The time is... Thanks, Jane. See you later. One final note. God damn it. Am I gonna have to use nasal spray every time I record something?